Rabbi Son, and welcome to our introduction for the 28th Parsha of Torah, Metzorah. Our Parsha will begin with our readings from Leviticus 14, verses 1 through chapter 15, 33. The Haftarah readings for this Parsha will begin in 2 Kings 7, verses 3 through 20, and will also include Malachi chapter 4, verses 1 through 6. Our Brit Hadashah readings will be from Romans chapter 6, verses 19 through 23. A new week is upon us, the week in which the focus of our study is Parsha number 28, Metzorah. This Parsha falls in the early sections of the Holy One's Great Kedusha Discourse, the 8th Sinaitic Discourse, which began at Leviticus 11, verse 1, and will not conclude until Leviticus 24, verse 9, constitutes the longest continuous divine discourse in the Torah. It is in this discourse that the Holy One both issues a prophetic call to all people He has redeemed to become holy as He is holy, and clearly defines each and every element of the beautiful form of holiness that He has ordained for us to incorporate into our lives and model to the world. The emphasis of the two-chapter segment of this discourse, to which the sages gave the name Metzorah, will be on empowering us to recognize, isolate, and rid ourselves of, as well as the houses in which we live, of what our English Bibles call uncleanness and leprosy. Of course, we have already discovered in these studies that we know in modern English as uncleanness is not at all what the Holy One refers to in the Kedusha Discourse of Torah as Tumah. Nor, we know now, is what we think of when we hear the modern English as leprosy anywhere close to what the Bridegroom King is referring to in this discourse when he speaks to us of a corrupted condition of the flesh, much more than just the skin, by the name of Za'arat. More on that in a moment. In the meantime, what we are becoming more and more sure of every day is that as we prepare our hearts and homes for the upcoming divine appointments of Passover, unleavened bread, first fruits, and counting the Omer, even before we start searching the house for leaven, we would probably all be well served to do a quick check of our flesh. Is there something toxic and self-destructive going on inside us, arising out of the persistently bad attitudes, negative talk, and destructive behavior patterns that needs to be addressed sooner rather than later? Let's face it, none of us want to be stuck outside the camp, covering the bottom part of our face and shouting, "Unclean, unclean," at the top of our lungs as happy pilgrims dance past us on their way up to Jerusalem to meet with the Holy One and join in the great celebration of our progress to date on the glorious journey to freedom. Nobody wants to be the odd Metzorah out. So perhaps we need to come to a functional level of understanding to what a Metzorah is, and for that matter, a person carrying any level of Tumah is and isn't. Tumah, a Hebrew word the Holy One uses multiple times in the Kedusha Discourse, is translated into English as uncleanness, pollution, or ritual impurity. But alas, Tumah is just one of the many Hebrew words employed by the Holy One in divine speech, which in reality, because of the vast difference of worldview between the Hebrew and Western cultures, simply has no suitable English equivalent. The adjective corresponding to the noun Tumah is Tameh, which we have in these studies come to recognize as the polar opposite of Tahor. We have encountered the adjective Tameh in regard to certain animals, which may not be eaten or touched, women in their time of menstruation, or when they have unnatural discharges or issues of blood, and persons and garments manifesting inward toxicity through the appearance in their flesh of various kinds of spots and wrinkles. Tumah and Tumay are both derived from the verb root tama, tet mem aleph, a verb which describes the process that derails or distracts a human being from his appointed journey toward wholeness, shalom, and fulfillment of purpose and destiny. Everything that distracts or diverts or hinders a son or daughter of the covenant from pursuing his or her divinely ordained path of life, or which tends to delay him or her in doing so, is tamei. All creatures, all things, as well as all people, thoughts, speech, and behaviors which draw the attention, affection, passion, or loyalty of a son or daughter of the covenant away from the Holy One's calling upon his or her life are tamei. Meanwhile, the cumulative negative effect that all tamei things, people, thoughts, and behaviors have brought about is what is described in Torah as tumah. If we are going to successfully approach the Holy One, much less commune with and receive downloads or revelation from Him at His appointed times, all the tumah insults that attach themselves to our lives need to be dealt with and surrendered according to our Creator's protocols. The most intense level of tumah a person can experience in this life is what is found at work in a metzorah. A metzorah is not a leper, as the modern English-speaking world uses that term. A metzorah is instead a human being that has za'arat. Za'arat involves a dangerously high level of acute and destructive tumah. To have za'arat is to get as far away from the holiness to which we are called as a human being to get. The presence of za'arat in a person means he or she is acutely spewing tumah out of his or her flesh like a volcano. From a persistent bad attitude to habitually critical, sarcastic, demeaning speech to a long-standing pattern of self-obsessed, shrew-like behavior, the metzora is a person who has deliberately and persistently wandered so far off of the Holy One's assigned pathway of life that he or she is simply too toxic for association. Heaven forbid, is that a description of what your life, or the life of anyone you know, has been like lately. The focus of the Kedusha Discourse this week will be upon the protocols by which all those with tumah, including the metzora, can be made whole. Are you up for it? Do you want to be whole? Do you want to get your life back on the pathway the Holy One has prescribed for life, health, and peace for you and those you love? If so, in order to double-check yourself for any sign of lingering tumah or oozing za'arat before the divine appointment of Passover and our celebration of freedom arrives, here are some questions you may want to ask yourself. Number one, are you currently nursing any oozing sores of anger, offense, or unforgiveness? Have you been wearing yourself out practicing outward forms of religious activity in order to cover up scaly areas of covetousness, materialism, or overindulgence of the flesh's appetites, drives, and urges? Have you been releasing any toxic discharges in attitude, opinion, speech, or in behavior? Are you walking around in rags covered with blood, either your own or your neighbor's, or are you wearing fine linen garments clean and white? Is your home a sweet haven of heavenly shalom, or a budding Sodom and Gomorrah full of worldly indulgences, fierce territoriality, profane thought and speech, self-obsession and contention? The community of the redeemed has recently experienced and is learning to embrace a bright new beginning. Something is vastly different from our environment and us since the Holy One forgave us one by one for the part each of us played in the sin of the golden calf. What has made the vast difference in our environment? It is the fact that now, in the midst of our camp, inhabiting the Mishkan, the Creator of the universe dwells right alongside us. We are hosting royalty. The manifest presence of the King of the universe is with us, and it has altered the spiritual climate dramatically. Before, he was mostly a vague concept about which we indulged romantic notions and engaged in theological arguments. Now, he is a very real and fascinating persona with whom it is our privilege to interact daily. Before, the idea that we were betrothed in covenant to him was nice and neat and theoretical. Now, passion for getting to know his heart, thoughts and his ways and the joy of learning to actually co-labor with him is his ongoing kingdom work, and they are burning away our flesh, reshaping our soul, renewing our mind, and circumcising our hearts. No longer is he merely the God of Abraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov, the God who speaks with Moshe, or the God who delivered us from Egypt with a mighty hand and an outstretched arm. He is our faithful King, our trusted shepherd, and our beloved bridegroom. His existence is no longer a theological premise to debate. It is more real than the heat of the Sinai Desert. His goodness is no longer open for the fruit of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil inspired argument. It is now the most obvious, incontrovertible fact in the universe. The physical manifestation of the glory of the Creator and King of the universe is now constantly within our field of sight. Seeing him high and lifted up, with the train of his robe filling the tabernacle, however, has made us realize to our horror that we are men of unclean lips, dwelling in the midst of a people of unclean lips. We are constantly aglow with the light of his countenance. He is constantly energizing us, and nothing is hidden from his sight. In his light we see light, and in the brightness of that light we also can suddenly see all our spots and wrinkles, all our blemishes, and every form and level of uncleanness from Tumah to Zaharat. He calls us to be holy as he is holy, and we realize that we are anything but. And that is where the Kedusha discourse comes in. The words he has been speaking over us in this eighth and longest Sinaitic discourse have been as coals from his altar. Like live coals, these words prophetically calling forth holiness from us have touched and are removing the uncleanness from not only our lips, but also our hearts, our minds, our wills, and every fold and wrinkle of our flesh. The ultimate extreme bridal makeover is about to enter its most dramatic phase. None of our number is exempt from its beautifying effects. Not even the one modern English readers have come to call the leper. In the Hebrew text, this one is called Hametzorah, the spewing human fountain of Zaharat. Parsha Metzorah therefore begins with the Holy One's instructions as to how a Metzorah, one who with the most severe degree of Tumah possible, can be cleansed. The opening section of the Parsha contemplates that every Metzorah will be made whole. The Holy One lays out in advance all the details by which a Metzorah who has returned to a state of wholeness can process through a dramatic post-cleansing celebration ceremony and re-enter the pathway to life, health, and peace with the rest of the redeemed community. Before the Parsha is over, the Holy One will also discuss the symptoms and laws of House Zaharat, the presence in our homes of which is indicated by the appearance of discolorations in the stones of the homes of people who refuse the Holy One's invitation to deal with the Tumah in their lives. Our Bridegroom King will then conclude the Parsha with a discussion of various circumstances and conditions that impart Tumah. This part of the Divine Discourse will get really, really personal as the Holy One's instructions turn to dealing with intimate and highly personal activities that provide attachment for the attachment of Tumah. Topics covered will include natural bodily processes associated with menstruation, procreative activity, as well as various abnormal bodily emissions and discharges. In each case, the procedure for returning to a tahor state is laid out by our Divine Bridegroom in detail, in order that there can be no question but that his goal in bringing every situation to the fore is redemptive, not punitive. When our studies in Parsha Metzorah are over, we should find ourselves totally in awe of the Holy One's kindness and goodness. For this Parsha reveals as much as any in Torah how he always has in mind and is constantly at work, leading us to and through a recovery strategy. He always has a course correction mapped out to offset every course deviation we can dream up. He always has a plan of healing that will cause every seemingly impossible situation we can create to culminate in joyful celebration, Blessed be his glorious name. The Haftarah reading for this week of Parsha Metzora begins in 2 Kings 7. The setting for the story is the city of Samaria, capital of the northern kingdom of Israel. The king of the northern kingdom is Jehoram, son of Ahab, who did evil in the sight of the Holy One. While Jehoram ruled the northern kingdom, a military crisis arose which threatened the very survival of his nation. Ben-Hadad, the king of neighboring Syria, amassed a great army, invaded the land, and besieged Samaria. As the siege continued, food became very scarce inside the city. The depth of the crisis is portrayed vividly by the author of the Bible as follows. A donkey's head was sold for 80 shekels of silver, and 1/4 of a cob of dove droppings brought 5 shekels of silver. 2 Kings 6:25. The main human characters of the passage we will read will be four men with Za'arat, who had, prior to the siege, sat in the gate of Samaria, begging for food. These men were some of the first and worst affected by the siege. What, they wondered to themselves, would they do to survive? No one had alms to give them. Even if they were given the usual small amounts of silver, the price of what little food was left in the city was so high that there was no way they could purchase enough to sustain them. So they weighed their options and decided, "Let us surrender to the army of the Syrians. If they keep us alive, we shall live. And if they kill us, well, we are going to die anyway." 2 Kings 7, verse 4. And so as darkness fell, four desperate and sickly men walked away from everything they had ever known and headed fearfully into the camp of the Syrians. What they found, what they did, when they got there, is the subject of our readings. This week's suggested reading from the Apostolic Writings is taken from the 6th chapter of Shaul of Tarsus' letter to the Romans. Shaul, a Hebrew of Hebrews, will speak to the people of Rome in whose homes he hopes to visit concerning the process by which followers of Yeshua become holy ones or saints, Kedoshim. Shaul will liken the process of sanctification for followers of Messiah to the Torah of the Metzora we will read about in the second Parsha of the week. As the Holy One teaches us in the Torah that every body part of the Metzora affected by Za'arat has to be voluntarily submitted to the priest for inspection and cleansing to be made tahor, Shaul will teach us that in the same manner, every part of our body, which we have used for things that our divine bridegroom has declared to be tamei and wickedness, is to be voluntarily submitted to the Holy One and surrendered to him to use in redemptive acts of the mitzvot that will make us tahor.